Greetings, cultivators from around the world. Jordan River here, back with more GrowCast, and I'm stuck in Folsom Trim Jail. Today we have Bless Coast Seeds. That's right, it is August, everybody, and we are moving into a whole month about breeder features and cultivargist, if you will. We're going to do a bunch of breeder features. We're going to talk about strains the whole entire month. You guys know I love this subject, and I could talk endlessly about the genetic variations between cannabis. So that's what we're doing this month, and we're kicking it off with a brand new breeder feature, Bless Coast Seeds. This is a super dope episode. This breeder was suggested by an awesome member. I know you guys are going to absolutely love today's episode. Before we get into it, though, shout out to Next Level Garden Supply Rockford, my favorite garden supply store in the suburbs of Chicagoland. We just hosted our amazing soil masterclass there with Queen of the Sun, and it was so awesome. Next Level is the best hydro store out there in the suburbs. They're super, super knowledgeable. It's a small family-owned business. They've got all the products you hear about on this show, all the good stuff they've got on their shelves. Go ahead and check them out. Next Level Garden Supply up on State Street in Rockford, Illinois. I used to drive like 30, 35 minutes just so I could shop at that place. And I want to give them their just due because they were awesome hosts. We did the badass Living Soil Masterclass up there. Again, with Queen of the Sun, it was an absolute hit, scoping everybody's soils, diving deep into that. So find them out in Rockford. Find us, of course, at growcastpodcast.com/classes. We're coming to a hydro store near you. Give us a suggestion of where we should come to next. And if you're ever in the Chicagoland area, definitely stop by to shop, and definitely stop by next time we do a class at Next Level Garden Supply, Rockford, Illinois. All right, everybody, let's get into it with Bless Coast Seeds. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in again today. Before we get started, as always, I urge you to share the show. Tell a friend about GrowCast. Tell a grower. Turn someone on to growing if they're a smoker. That's the best thing you can do out there. And make sure to check out everything we're doing, from our classes to our Seed Co. and membership. It's all at growcastpodcast.com/action. Now, let's get right into today's episode. We are in August, and we are doing a breeder feature August. What more could you ask for? I know you guys love the breeder stuff. And we're going to have some old friends coming on, and also some new ones, like today's guest from Bless Coast Seeds. We have the one and only Breeder Titan on the line. What's up, man? How you doing?
Good, man. Excited to be here.
Yes, yes. Thank you for coming on here. Bless Coast Seeds, of course. Find him at Bless Coast Seeds on Instagram and all over the place. What's up, Bless Coast? How are you doing, man? You know, a member, a beloved member, Crazy Legs, insisted that we have you on to feature you and talk about your strains. I appreciate you coming on. I know you're coming to us live from the West Coast. How is it going out there with the seed company and with everything?
Oh, man, it's a gorgeous day. Things are moving along. It's the middle of the season, kind of, for what season we got. So, yeah, man, lots of exciting stuff going on.
I love it. I'm looking at your cultivars right now. They look incredible. Before we get into the specifics, though, can you tell us a little bit about you and your story? What got you into breeding specifically? What brought you to medical cannabis? And what started Bless Coast as a brand?
Yeah, man. So, you know, I definitely smoked herb as a kid, but I really didn't start getting into the breeding part of it until I was around 1920.
That's pretty young.
And yeah, I was pretty young, but I was kind of forced into it, man. I got in a really bad accident when I was 18, right out of high school, got a motorcycle accident, and I got paralyzed. And, you know, I always loved herb, but after that happened to me, the whole aspect of growing the plant kind of helped me pull out of that situation a little bit, gave me something to focus on. And yeah, man, it was just kind of pulled me in, man, you know. Wow. And yeah, that was kind of the start of it. And I was also really lucky, man. I had a lot of really, really cool mentors, like Subcool and Hoko, like, you know, just older cats that have been in it for a long time that kind of helped bring me along real quick. And that's kind of how it started for me, man.
Wow. Had the honor of having Subcool on the show recorded before he passed. That's cool that he was a mentor of yours from a breeding perspective. But it sounds like you're echoing what I've heard a lot on this show, which is the medicinal aspect, and specifically breeding, coming from a medicinal need. You know, clearly you had this accident and you needed some bud that worked for your specific needs. And you probably realized, what, I'm going to have to breed what works for me. Is that kind of how it all started?
You know, actually, not really, man. To be 100% honest about it, it was more you know, I had grown a lot of seeds from like overseas, and you know, I was really big on the forums back in the day. So I had grown out a lot of gear, and when I found Subcool, you know, I grew out some of his gear. It was just so much. It was just so different.
Better, dare I say, better?
Well, better and just more vibrant and expressive, more hyper expressive in certain traits. You know, I had never really experienced like pure lemon or, you know, some of these different like candy variations and, you know, like just the crazy things that, that Space Queen brought to a lot of crosses, you know, the cherry from it. And it was just an eye-opening experience to see how, you know, the plasticity of cannabis, that bean pool really is just unlike any other plant on this earth, man. It's, you can almost find any smell you want to find, and you'll find smells that only exist in cannabis. So that aspect of it just really kind of captured my imagination, man. And, you know, after I met Subby and I showed him some of the gear I'd grown out, that's when we kind of developed a relationship. And I passed him this, this really special cutting I got from a cannabis church in Seattle. It was a Killer Queen cut, and it's a different one than the Lone Star cut. It was truly an exceptional plant, man.
Wow.
And, you know, we exchanged that clone, and that's the clone that he went on to make a lot of his crosses with, like Scarlet Queen. Anything you see Killer Queen in, that that Subby made, that was with that clone I gave him. But, you know, meeting him and then growing out all his mothers and all of his clones, like, you know, the Exodus cheese, which I still work with today, and you know, just getting the experience of growing through really, truly elite individuals, you know, and then moving on and growing out clones from like Lemon Hoko, like Hog's Breath and the pre-98 Blueberry Sativa. Like, it just, like, if you really want to get into breeding, you have to spend a lot of time going through the gene pool and growing out these elite cuttings. Grow all the real chems, like get the provenance on them and grow out the real things, so you have these reference points in your brain for when you're making selections or going through new material, you can kind of say, ah, this is like that, or I've experienced this before. And so I spent a lot of my early time just learning how not only they did the business of selling seed, but also just like which cultivars are truly exceptional, which cultivars go together well, things like that, you know. And that is the majority of how I spent the first 10 years. I'd say most of that time I was just making seeds. And for the past 5 or 6, you know, I've really been more into fixing traits and getting more into the science side of it. You know, I'm right now I'm studying plant breeding and genetics at Oregon State, and just combining the more technical side with the experience of growing through so many clones and special individuals, and putting those two things together is kind of how I've based a lot of my projects.
That's really cool, man. I love that. Do you want to speak on that for a moment? Just kind of the idea of locking down traits. You know what I mean? Whether you want to talk about the traits that you specifically look for or what you've learned in your education.
Yeah.
You know, I hear a lot of breeders say you got to take it to F3, you got to take it to F4 or whatever. What are your thoughts on solidifying specific traits in cannabis lines?
Well, cannabis is a naturally cross-pollinated plant. So therefore, due to that forced cross-pollination and the most of the genes and most of the individuals you find are going to be highly heterozygous, meaning they have one copy of one gene and another copy of another. And when you're talking about fixing traits in cannabis and people are saying, oh, I got to go to F3, F4, that, you know, mostly refers to when you breed siblings together, you have a higher chance of recombining two copies of the same gene. That's
right.
Called being homozygous, right? And for me, the way you go about selection determines on what you're trying to achieve in the final goal. Like, for instance, if I had a plant, single individual that I thought was perfect in every single way, nothing I could improve on this plant, I might go about a project completely different as far as selection and what methods I use as far as like either selfing or breeding, go about recreating the fixed, you know, whatever traits that has in a progeny kind of exhibit that trait. But for me, I don't really try to recreate things. I try to improve them. So an example would be like Exodus cheese. It has an amazing terpene profile. I mean, one of the most amazing things you can ever smell on this planet. It's unlike any other plant. But it has other qualities to it that could be improved. And so when I go about selection, I want to start, you know, my first F1 generation and obviously eliminate off-types, but I want to kind of leave it open at first, so to speak, and maybe select for things that are missing from that cheese plant as far as being a quality. Like, you know, maybe vigor or structure or stability, some of these more basic things, you know. And as I work down those filial generations, I start trying to be more selective, more pinpoint on certain details, certain specific traits, one, two, or three things, and really focus on those so those become fixed later down the line in the different filial generations. So, you know, the idea would be to maintain the qualities of cheese, like the terpene and the effect, the potency, obviously, you know, things of that nature, but maybe fix a better trait in there for structure, yield, stability, vigor, some of these more basic things, right?
I love that. I love that kind of approach, selecting exactly the traits that you're looking for in each one. What are your thoughts on, like, you know, a heavy inbred line? Would you ever take things to, you know, F7, F9 and beyond, and then maybe cross them out? Or is that not something you're interested in?
Oh, of course. In fact, I think the misconception with the word hybrid today, it's like the only true F1 hybrid is when you take two highly inbred lines and then cross them together, right? And that's when you get what's called hybrid vigor or heterosis, where you see individuals that express at a higher rate or a higher quantity of a certain trait over both of the parents that you started with, right? And so, for instance, like my main line, which is, you know, Samurai Sour, aka Adam Splitter, that is a highly inbred line of sour diesel. I absolutely love sour diesel. And so that kind of, if you look at it, is an inbred line of sour diesel, but at the same time, there are some outcrosses in there with plants that offer a very similar set of traits. So my thinking on it is, if you inbreed too far, you can get inbreeding depression where you get, you know, traits that are not advantageous, right? But if you can start inbreeding with subtle outcrossing with plants that offer very similar traits, the population might still be heterozygous, might still have variability, but it's going to have variability between things that are very similar.
That's a right? good point.
So if you grow out, you know, I'm working Adam Splitter now, I've got it to the F3 generation, right? And I've fixed about three or four separate traits in it, but there's still variation from how sour one individual is to maybe how OG one is. There'll be a little mixture between the two. Some will be more hyper expressive in one thing than the other. And that allows the progeny, the individuals, to be very similar as far as they're all very vigorous. They all have a very similar structure. They all have a lot of commonalities, but an individual can go and select his specific preference for the flavor profile and the effect that he truly wants, you know? So I kind of like that as a way to give people a consistent product, but also give them the ability to maybe find something that's very unique and special to themselves and kind of keep that one going and not feel like, well, I have the same plan as everybody else, you know?
That is a fascinating way to look at it, man. I like how much thought you put into this. Clearly you're really passionate and looking to deeply educate yourself about this endeavor. So I really like that. You can't bring up the Samurai Sour though, and then we don't dive into it, because I see it all over your page. Now you're telling me the Samurai Sour is the same thing as the Adam Splitter. They're the same strain?
Yeah. So it started out as Adam Splitter when I originally started it, but, you know, Obsolete had an Adam Splitter line, and I have a lot of respect for the guys that came before me. And so I changed the name to not confuse.
Isn't
you know?
That funny? We're going to run out of words though, Titan, honestly. I totally respect that. And for you to be like, okay, I'm going to change this because I respect the guy who made the original. That's amazing. But with so many people making crosses, we talk about this on the show a lot, man. It's so funny. Like, you didn't mean to double name that. It just happens because we're running out of words.
You know, me and my other buddies laugh, you know, my breeder buddies laugh, and we kind of say, well, unless you've sold 500 packs under that name, it's not your name, you know, but Obsoleto has been in the game for a long time. And
sure.
I was brought into the game real young, and I have a lot of respect for the guys that pushed this forward, because unlike today, back then you'd go to jail and lose your family over some of these clones and these plants, keeping them alive. And so I have a lot of respect for them guys, man.
That's nice you know? And so, for you to do that. That's really cool. That's funny too, because we've got an Adam Smasher, which is dangerously close. I got to say though, I like Samurai Sour better as a name. You have the alliteration. And it just kind of looks like a Samurai Sour.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, I'm going to be real honest. I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings here. I feel like, because I remember the Humboldt County Sour Diesel and stuff like that. I feel like this is the most impressive Sour Diesel that I've seen in a long time. I almost feel that Sour Diesel had dropped off a little bit there. I don't know if it was, you know, the good cuts collecting viroids over time or what have you, the quality kind of degrading over time. But Diesel's sours specifically, I feel like we're kind of falling off there a second. And I'm looking at these and they look beautiful, man. I'm impressed, I must say. And do you agree? Do you feel that Sour Diesel and a lot of these kind of heirloom or whatever you want to call them strains that we're so familiar with, I feel they almost degrade over time sometimes.
Well, there's definitely viral accumulation when you keep clones around for a long time. But I think, you know, there's a couple of different aspects to it. There's one, there's the nostalgia, and people kind of remember things grander than maybe they really were.
Definitely.
And specifically speaking of Sour Diesel too, that's that gene pool and those cultivars, you know, a lot of reses work. And, you know, I grow a bunch of old sour. I have like four different old Sour Diesel cuttings right now that I do work with. And it's one of those plants where if you don't grow it right and you don't nail it, it can end up a little boofy. But if you do it right, it's truly one of the most elite experiences. The flavor and the high are so, it's one of the jars that you'd never get tired of smoking. You know, you can have a jar of like tangy, something real hyper, you know, terpy, whatever it is. You get tired of it kind of quick. You never get tired of really good, sticky, dank Sour Diesel, man. It just, you know, and
I love it.
For me, though, I'll tell you what, like, that's one of the prime examples of having an elite old school cultivar that has a lot that can be improved upon, man. That has a lot of really exceptional traits and it has a lot of really shitty traits.
Yeah, that's an honest take. I agree. And that's a good point, too, because when you try it around the country, maybe you're trying it at dispensaries or this or that home grow, some strains need to be babied in order to express themselves properly. So that is actually a really good point, and maybe why I've observed not getting my head blown off since those like Humboldt days. You know, I remember that sour.
It's a full process thing. You can nail the grow and mess up the cure and the dry on Sour Diesel really
easily.
Totally. It's like chem. You know, chem has a really short shelf life. Like if you have a really nice fresh batch of chem, it'll blow your mind. If it sits on the shelf for 2 months, it'll turn orange and brown. It'll lose that. It'll lose everything to it. And Sour Diesel is kind of the same way. You kind of want it a little bit fresh, real sticky, real fucking moist, and like has that pillow texture to it. Like
totally.
You really want to, you know, like there's a feel to it, man. And I think a lot of days people are relying on kind of set standards and everything's real automated. And, you know, cannabis is so diverse. Until you really dive into a gene pool and dive into an individual for a long time and grow it out for a while, you're not going to be able to get that really good expression out of it that maybe you got from the guy who has done that. You know,
man, I agree. Unless it lines up perfect with your environment by happenstance, like you can learn these, you can learn one cultivar for a decade. It's crazy how intricate they are. But like I was just saying, I think some people fight their climate, or I shouldn't say fight their climate, but you can't beat your local climate. Like if you're growing in Denver, there's going to be dryness. You know what I mean? You're going to have to deal with that. So maybe some of these cultivars with more volatile terpenes that might be a little better suited for a wetter, colder cure to preserve those volatile terpenes. That's an interesting thought. Very, very interesting.
Makes a lot of sense. And going back to Atom Splitter, you know, for me, when I've grown out a lot of Sour Diesel, it's like, I really love the terpene expression. I love the high, but the actual flower morphology, it's not exactly what I would want. Like, you know, when I was talking to you earlier about putting together all the pieces of a cultivar, I think some people kind of get lost in one part of it. Like, this has a cool fan leaf. I'm going to keep this line around and just use this fan leaf as a genetic marker. And it's like, well, the guy who's smoking that herb, he don't care about what that fan leaf looks like. You know, there's a cultivator side of it. There's a consumer side of it. And there's also like the trimming and the you know,
processing. Yeah,
processing. Exactly. So when I'm looking at these plants, I want to figure out how do I put together a set of genes in one population where it's an amazing plant to grow. It's an amazing plant to process. But overall, most importantly, it's an amazing plant to smoke. And with Atom Splitter, that was really my goal for that Sour Diesel line, was to take a lot of the really good Sour Diesel cuttings and try to pass on that experience of Sour Diesel, but make it easy to trim, make the flower morphology to where it's got today's standard of what things need to look like to be sold without people being able to smell it. There's a lot of little pieces to it, making it have the right structure and a super amount of vigor so you can get through cycles quickly. you know, I flower a lot of my Adam Splitter seedlings like 12, 14 days from seed, and they end up 3.5 feet tall with a really good yield, you know.
Wow.
And for me, being able to flip through cycles fast is not only advantageous as a breeder, but just for a producer, it's an amazing thing to get through cycles quickly and still end up with a nice yield and an amazing product, because the less time that you're vegging, the less, there's less time for problems to occur, either whatever it be, pests, mismanagement, you know, AC goes out, whatever it is, right?
So, it's true. Less overall cause mortality. And yeah, we were just having this conversation in the member Discord, which is, if you can shorten that veg time, you don't have to beat or even match your yield necessarily. If you get more right. plants in there and then flip them earlier, you can do the math in your head and you might come in a little under on the yield, but so far ahead in time that that year you would yield more. So it's an interesting thought that like time is money, time is yield, and flipping it earlier with the right cultivars, with the, to be very clear, with the correct cultivars, flipping yeah. it earlier can be like a massive game changer in your bottom line or just your medical supply or whatever.
Yeah, it's the architecture of that plant that you're flipping too. Like with Adam Splitter, you're going to get a lot of really good elongated cola, but you know, again, even on those colas, I don't like colas that like they fit form where you're like pulling pieces out of a cola, because that offers really bad consistency throughout a pound, right? But I want them to elongate and connect. So there's even like specifics to that morphology. But my main point is that yield comes down to canopy depth, not canopy width. The more depth you have in a canopy, the more yield you can get, right? If you have a ton of large colas stacked next to each other that, you know, are giving you a good depth of canopy and another under canopy underneath that, you can hit those yield goals just as easy. But if you're growing out, you know, say Bubba Kush, where you just have little golf balls on a flat canopy,
right,
and you're trying to do numbers, it's not necessarily going to work for you like that. And when I was starting out and I was more just interested in just the flower itself, like even like a good example, like growing Subcool's Tiny Bomb Cut, pitiful plant, amazing weed, terrible yield, right? But amazing weed. Mm-hmm. I was more focused on that in the beginning, but after I owned a 502 and I did, you know, years of trying to make that go, that's 502 is a recreational grow in Washington. And then, you know, I also consulted for really large operations, thousands of plants, big rooms. And I learned that like, there's a whole nother side to this industry now
yes.
that has to be taken. Like, if you have to take account for that. And, you know, a lot of us old school forum guys are like, you know, the industry is the devil or whatever, but this is the reality, man. This is what it is now. And so if you're not going to look at it from a professional and, you know, use the technology that's available to you, if you're not going to look at it in that way and you're only focused on, hey, this weed's dank, like you're just not going to survive. So it's definitely about putting, you know, a lot of these practices that have been in use for a lot of our other agricultural crops now and applying those to cannabis, you know, but maintaining what keeps cannabis, what makes cannabis special, you know, what that old school back in the day type of vibe we had with a lot of these plants, keeping that alive, but improving their ability to actually be grown in a commercial setting. Because I'll tell you, I tried to run pre-98 blueberry and a lot of these old cultivars in a 502, and it's just, the money's not in it for you to grow a plant that's not going to be able to be commercially viable, man. And they'll suck the life out of you financially. And doesn't matter how good the herb is, man, if you can't produce enough of it at the right cost. So
that is a really good point. And also on the home grow side, usually your plant count is limited. And if you've got five plants in Illinois and they're all golf ball buds, like you said, you're not going to have enough to last your medicine until the next harvest. So yield does matter, you know, and you really want to check that box of yield and trichome density. I'm still scrolling through these Samurai Sour pictures, man. Just really impressive. The bud size is there. Really good trichome coverage, like halfway down the fan leaves. I love that type of fan leaf coverage. Yeah, really, really delicious looking color show. Nice, beautiful color show. Fade at the end. It's good stuff.
I'm a huge flavor guy, man. So for me, if the herb smells good, but it doesn't taste the same way as it smells, that's not a winner. And that's why I work with lines like Sour Diesel, Exodus Cheese, pre-98 Blueberry, because those cultivars are not only insane smelling and very unique in the way that they smell, but you taste that smell when you smoke it. And that to me is a huge, I mean, like when you have a good bag of Sour Diesel, your lips smacking for a minute after every hit, because it's just the flavors there.
That is a really good point.
Yeah, all the work that I do, I mean, I could just make cookie hybrids and things like that that are really beautiful and bag appeal, but they don't have that flavor.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have the flavor for me. So yeah, I'm a big flavor guy.
That's really, really cool. And a little bit surprising. I thought, like I said earlier, I thought it was going to be more medicinally oriented, but you were like, you know, it's all about the terps at the end of the day. I mean, listen, yeah, cannabis is my medicine, but flavor is what you seem to lead by.
Well, the terps kind of give you a precursor to what the effect's going to be like. Mm-hmm. And for me, cannabis is such a subjective thing, and everybody's chemical physiology is so much different than the next person. And so what might affect me in one way might not affect somebody in another.
That's
so
true.
I feel like my goal is, again, to provide an exceptional plant to grow that has the right amount of variation between a very specific set of things to be have variation within, that people can find the one that really works for them. You know, that's the thing. It's not a blanket type of plant where, yeah, this plant has, it's a type two, you know, half CBD, half THC. It'll work for everybody the same way. Like the terpenes matter, man. There's an entourage effect. There's it's just like aromatherapy even, man. You know, like they make a huge difference in the experience, man. And the thing we're all hunting with these elite cultivars, these elite clones, is an experience, a repeatable experience.
That's exactly right. Really good point, man. And like I said, clearly you've given a lot of thought to this, and I like that. Have you gotten any of these tested? We'll be right back with Blessed Coast, but before that, shout out to the Order of Cultivation. This is the GrowCast membership program you've been hearing so much about, our secret society of growers. Listen, the membership program brings a ton of benefits. First of all, if you like this show, you're going to love membership. You're helping support the show, and you get tons of bonus content. Archive GrowCast episodes just for signing up, hundreds of hours. You'll never run out of content again. Second of all, we've got the actual live streams. GrowCast TV is every single Wednesday night for members only. It's the greatest show in cannabis for the greatest membership in cannabis. And you will love GrowCast TV. It's broadcast live from the Biodome, my studio /grow. You are going to absolutely fall in love with the show. We do long form interviews. We do game shows, contests, giveaways, live interaction with chat. It is absolutely killer. Come and check it out at growcastpodcast.com/membership. That's where you can find all of it. Not to mention our little Discord community. That's right. It's a private Discord community. And I'm telling you, it is the best. We are like family in there. If you want to swap and trade, talk about growing, get all of your garden problems solved, we will take care of you in the Order of Cultivation Discord. Not to mention the AMA live streams, bonus content, extra giveaways, weekend updates. GrowCast membership, the Order of Cultivation, is absolutely packed with benefits that you're going to love. So don't wait anymore. Go to growcastpodcast.com/membership. It's a perfect day to sign up. It's the first of the month. Jump on in there, because I will be closing registration and making it invite only sooner rather than later. All right, everybody, go and check that out. Of course, we love the Order of Cultivation. Thank you to all the members. Thank you to all you listeners. Let's get back to Blessed Coast Seeds. Have you gotten any of these tested much, or had these? Like what types of numbers of terpenes and things like that, and types of terpenes are you looking at with the tests?
Well, I'm not a big believer in a lot of the terpene testing, because I don't believe that a lot of the terpenes expressed in cannabis are even calibrated in those machines to even like be identified. But they're all over the place, man. You know, 20. I mean, nothing outrageous. I mean, even if they were, I probably wouldn't really believe it. As far as terpenes go, like, you know, there's some that range in the sevens, threes, fours. It's all over the place. It's really cultivar dependent. But again, like, I've had, like, for an example, I had a Pandora's Box pheno that I absolutely loved. And it was easily one of the most resinous plants I've ever seen. And it's so hyper lemon. And that thing tested at 14%, but it tested at 7% for terpenes, because lemonine's obviously calibrated into a lot of these machines. So, I mean, like, again, I just think, especially for breeding, you want to be able to put like quantifiable numbers to a lot of these things. But our ability to measure a lot of that stuff is not truly 100% accurate. So you kind of got to use it as just a certain, like a piece of the puzzle, you know?
Absolutely.
It's not a big part. It's a small piece, you know?
I think that you're dead on, and I have no way of proving this scientifically. But there's so much more that goes into aroma and flavor than we're giving credit for.
Yeah.
With cannabis, you know, there was a speaker at the Regenerative Conference saying how the cheese flavor comes from a naturally produced butyric acid, and how that's not something, you know, we don't measure, we don't talk about it. And there's all these other hundreds or who knows, thousands of compounds that cannabis is capable of producing that aid in aroma and flavor.
100%.
Which interesting.
100%.
A lot of the listeners know that I work in coffee as well. It's the exact same thing, man. There's 500 plus compounds in that can be found produced by the coffee bean. And we don't know how a lot of them contribute to health and flavor. This is the most studied food product on the planet. We don't know. So I don't know. I'm skeptical of the tests too.
Yeah. And it's one of those things too, where like you've been through a lot of coffee and your palate flavors and different chemicals identify themselves differently to your brain than they would to somebody who hasn't gone through a lot of coffee. And, you know, going back to the whole collecting clones thing, and like I've literally tried to grow out every elite clone that I could ever find that I, you know, I've been told that was worth growing out simply, you know, for the experience to update my brain's data, man, to be able to pick up on these subtle differences, man. Like that's the, you know, people get into the breeding thing and it's like, well, how long have you been growing for? That's not really the question. The question is, how many cultivars have you gone through? How much of the gene pool have you experienced? Because the more of the gene pool you can experience and the more you can update your brain and kind of connect that galaxy in your mind of smells and flavors and traits and all these different small subtle details, like that's how you really become a good breeder, because you know you can't make selections you can't see or smell or identify. You know what I mean?
I really, really like that, man. That is a really good take. What are some of the more kind of obscure traits that you might get really excited about? What I mean is not just that it's a heavy yielder, for instance, but like trichome concentration in certain areas. That's one thing I've noticed a lot, right? Like the tops of the leaves, how far out of the leaves, the edges of the leaves, the tops and bottoms of the leaves, a lot of these hash strains, the trichome concentration seems to be a very important factor. Like what are some of the more nebulous traits that you would get very excited about?
Well, I think it comes down to end use. If you're looking at making like hash or something like this, right, you're going to want a certain type of flower morphology and you're going to want a certain type of trichome morphology and you're going to want those trichomes to be in certain, you know, highly clustered in certain places. But there's also, I have an inkling that trichomes that are produced on different parts of the plant, we already know have different chemical compositions, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I feel like some of these plants that produce a lot of trichome coverage on the fan leaves, I feel like that should not be an indicator of potency in either way, either more or less, mm-hmm. you know, because really it's not the amount of trichomes, it's what chemicals are within those trichomes, you know, and then you get into the amount, right? Because then you can start increasing, you know, obviously the quantities of these chemicals, the more you have, but there is something to be said for certain chemical compositions of certain plants, trichomes that makes them more potent than maybe a plant next to it that produces more trichomes that have a slightly different right. chemical composition. So that's a big thing. And trying to identify that takes a lot of technology. And for me, I'm still old school with it, to where the most important thing to me at the end of the day is the potency and the effect that I get from it. So I don't necessarily judge so much on what a trichome, like the coverage looks like on a plant. I judge it from how the experience, how the potency affects me and everybody that tries it.
Really good point.
Yeah, that's kind of more, you know, the more I get into the technological side of things, and especially for breeding and using like marker assisted selection and identifying genes and actually going through the chromosomes and making selections that way, you also think of it from a technological standpoint of like, yeah, there may only be one gene for THC, but does a high THC plant give you a higher experience of potency than this other plant over here that maybe is polygenic for a gambit of different terpenes and other chemicals, like you were mentioning earlier with cheese, that give it a totally different experience? And the potency for an individual is just maybe not more, but it's more expressive in one direction.
Yes, 1000%, man.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about that gene-assisted kind of breeding? I mean, this is new technology. It was all just classifications, people making stuff up and grouping plants. Now they're actually genetically analyzing these plants, identifying which markers are associated with which traits, and then selecting mm-hmm. based on further testing, essentially?
Yeah, essentially. And it's actually not new technology. Cannabis is just new to the technology. You know, they have been making it more cost effective to do this type of work, and that's kind of been the improvement. But this stuff's been around for a long time, man. And we just, you know, people weren't allowed to really study this plant. And, you know, going back to the whole like improving plants thing, it's like, you know, the PM1 gene that Oregon CBD is identified, you know, if you could take Chem91 and make it quantitatively PM resistant by just breeding in one gene, I mean, that would be an exceptional improvement exactly. for a lot of cultivators, you know, to be able to say, hey, I have the same herb, but when I grow it, it's genetically making it to where there's no way that, you know, glavinomyces or any of the different species that that gene controls of powdery mildew are unable to infect this plant. And that's kind of where the marker selection and a lot of that technology is going to go. It's going to go more towards that, like, you know, they've just identified which gene turns on and off THC, and they can manipulate the amount of THC a plant can produce by manipulating this gene. And, you know, now they're getting into the whole triploidy thing where they're able to stack three copies of genes and see how that expresses itself phenotypically, you know. And so it's not going to be, you know, I know guys like Chimera are doing some more work towards getting towards specific terpenes and identifying genes that associate with those terpenes. But I think the big deal for the large ag sector is going to be more towards improving utility, you know, making certain plants more fibrous, or, you know, unlocking higher amounts of certain specific cannabinoids, to, you know, CBDV and all these really kind of new novel cannabinoids in plants. That's where that market's going to go.
It is very fascinating. And I'm very interested to see how it changes the landscape. Sometimes worried, sometimes excited. Yeah. This kind of lends to my next question, though, a subject that I really don't know much of anything about. You know, these gene editing programs or strategies, processes, I don't know what you would call them, things like CRISPR out there that you can, the idea is that if you just need to change that one gene or manipulate it, like you said, you use this gene manipulation process. What are your thoughts on something like CRISPR and its possible impact on the cannabis industry?
Well, I think it's a very controversial topic when you start talking about genetically modified organisms. But I think just like with anything else, if you're very absolute about something, you're going to miss the details that might change your opinion, right? And so like an example like golden rice, man, the gene that they used to make golden rice, it was always in that plant. All they did was turn it on, and that ended up helping a lot of people as far as their nutrition and preventing disease and things of this nature. So, you know, it's not like all genetically modified organisms are bad. It's which specific gene they are modifying that really matters, right? If it's something that can enter the gene pool and cause a lot of, you know, problems to occur in wild type plants, that's probably not a good thing, right? Right. But if it's something that we can control and helps people, then that could be a good thing, you know? And I think, you know, when you're talking about CRISPR, a lot of these things come down to, I mean, some of the stuff's really simple, like single nucleotide substitutions where they change just one letter in that gene and all of a sudden it gives a totally different trait, right? Or they're taking whole genes and splicing them into plants and giving them the ability to do different things. And I think when you get into that type of subject, you really just, like I said, you have to focus on what specific gene they're working with and what's the real goal here, you know? Is it something that's just totally focused on just making money, or is it something that, you know, could end up helping people, you know? And it's just like with all technology, you got to use it for the welfare of people more than profit, and then you'll usually end up in a good spot.
Do you know how that process occurs, what that process looks like? So you're talking about, you know, the DNA chain and replacing a nucleotide. What are they using? Is this chemically done? Is this done with the aid of a software program? What's the idea behind this?
It's actually bacteria, right? So they've identified bacteria that can basically go along a chromosome and cut certain portions of that genetic material out, right? They cut it out. And then what they do is I'm trying to describe this in as most latent terms as I can.
Yes.
What they basically do is, you know, okay, so you're looking at a gene and it's like a sentence, right? You can read it because it's a certain order and combination of letters, right? And when you read that order and combinations of letters, you understand what it's saying. When you go and you change one letter in that word, you might not understand what it's saying, or it might say a completely different thing. Mm. And that's kind of what they're doing, is they're going in there and they're changing either one letter or one word in a sentence of this genetic code. And it's now saying something else, and it's now transcribing a different trait, a different protein that can make something different express in that plant.
Right.
If that
right.
makes sense.
Yeah. So exactly. So when you take a look at these dog breeding programs, they have all these letter combinations that will match up to different traits of the dog. Like if it's,
exactly.
you know, this shade or that shade or has a spot or whatever,
yep.
and it's all, you know, quantifiable in percentages and things like that. But you're saying that this is, what I didn't know is a bacterially aided process that replaces
yep.
some of those. That's really interesting.
Yeah. You should look up some of that stuff. It's very, very interesting, man. But it's, you know, and they also have they've had these things for a long time, what are called back libraries, which are basically these circular pieces of bacterial DNA that they've basically added a certain gene to. And any time that they want to add that gene to a cultivar or a line, they can go in that back library and pull out that specific set of bacteria that have this gene. And in vitro, they can add that gene to those embryos and basically get that plant to exhibit wow. that trait. So that there's a lot of really old school stuff that seems like it's really cutting edge technology, but it's been around for a long time.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because it's this stuff predates the internet, but it's we're about 50 years in, a little less than 50 years into the discovery of DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
where is this going to go? I've made a joke before on this show, like glow in the dark cannabis. You know what I mean? Like what implications do we have here?
Well, there's going to be good and bad with all of it. But I think for me, my specific goal is, like I said earlier, like I understand what makes cannabis special. I know the plant and I know what about it is unique and needs to be preserved. And a lot of these guys doing this work, you know, they're PhDs that never really grew up in that culture.
They're eggheads,
and,
man. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
And it's fine,
yeah.
but they're eggheads.
Yeah. They didn't grow up in that culture. And, you know, my whole thing is like, I want to make sure that culture is preserved and considered when we're using this technology to make improvements or not, you know? And so I think the more and more that, you know, guys that are really are passionate about the plant dive into the academic side of it and really try to get their hands into some of this technology, I think that's what's going to help us preserve, I think, what we're all hoping doesn't get destroyed, you know, by these big companies using these forms of technology.
I totally agree, man. That is a really great take. This was an awesome exploration. I want to make sure we have time to talk about what you're working on now, what the future is for Blessed Coast, and get all the plugs
yeah.
in and all that good stuff. But seriously, awesome, awesome episode. I do appreciate you being here
oh,
and sharing
me too,
this knowledge.
Man. 100%. Love it.
What do you have planned for the rest of 2022 going into 2023? Continuing to work on sours? Anything new that you'd like to tease?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, there's definitely a couple new things. But, you know, I'm continuing Samurai to F3 and doing some combining ability testing on a bunch of different female selections. And like I mentioned earlier, I got Rez's old sour cut, which is the same cut I kind of started the line with back, you know, I think it's like 5 or 6 years ago now. So basically what Atom Splitter is it's Headbanger, which is a Rez IBL kind of done by Karma, basically a sour IBL line. I took a Headbanger male, crossed that to the Rez cut. I took that Rez cut and I crossed it to a Sour Power OG. That's where the Biker Kush OG kind of things come into.
Damn.
That's the F1. So the F3s are basically an inbred line of that work. Now I've taken an F2 male and I've taken it back to the Rez clone. I've taken it back to the original diesel, the 96, and I've taken it back to the Choco cut, which I believe is the same as the Skunk Tech cut. And I have another old sour diesel cutting that we don't really have the provenance on, but it's either, you know, an S1 or a sibling, something, you know, along those lines.
Sure.
That's really an exceptional plant too. And so, but those will be coming out for testing. You can get those on the Discord. If you're a part of the Discord, you can test some of those for me. Those will be coming out in the next 2 months. And then the Exodus Cheese Samurais, man, that's what I'm super excited for about Ooh. This next drop. It's going to be like a cheese diesel kind of thing. And I'm really going to work through and try to make a really something special out of that line, because those are basically two of my most favorite cannabis. Like, it's a marriage of two of my favorites. And they're both in that same kind of funky spectrum, right? And so that will be cool. And then I'm doing some V2s. You know, I did the GG4 splitters and the pre-98, the blueberry splitters, which people really love. Those will be V2'd, so it'll be a different male. F2 male should have a little bit more of a consistent progeny, because that F2 male is going to be a little bit more fixed in certain traits. And then what else is coming out? Loompa, man, my buddy Loompa. So he's got that headband, which is probably the best OG that you can find. So the splitter headbands will be coming out.
Ooh, I like that, man. I love a good headband. You know, again, yeah, that NorCal area. There's a lot of good headband floating around.
Well, Loompa's headband specifically, not the 707, not all that fake, whatever. Like Loompa's headband, it's a pure OG, but it has this extra touch of this weird funkiness to it that it's an amazing plant. And I'll tell you what, the potency of that plant, 10 out of 10. That's one of the most potent plants I've ever smoked, ever. Mm. And so that would be a really good cross. And me and Loompa are going to work on that and, you know, work that down filially and try to get a really cool expression of that potency that headband has, but offer some of those more crazy sour diesel and kind of, you know, mix of OG and sour diesel terpenes on the smells there. But yeah, so blueberry splitters, the headband splitters, the cheese splitters, all the F3s, and then those four sour diesel lines. I think I got a Gelato 41 in there too, so there'll be a V2 of that that Basia to the splitter too. So a lot of cool shit, man.
Yeah, the Gelato, cool Gelato 42, you said?
41. I grew up to 33, 41. The 45, the 41. And to me, the 41 was the best, man. 33 was cool. I liked the herb. Plant was real iffy as far as a lot of, you know, cookies, kind of a prime finicky example of really, really good herb, really shitty plant. So, sure. Yeah, that's kind of, but yeah, that's kind of the next drop that's coming out. And those will be available for testing on the Discord, man. So if you guys aren't in Discord, definitely try to get in there. Northwest nice. 47 group, and yeah, and then the Blessed Coast server, the Artful Science of Cannabis, is definitely willing to take in new testers and yeah, grow the community, man.
Go and find them, everybody, at Blessed Coast Seeds on Instagram, and then I believe there's a link to the Discord on there if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Go and join, check it out. Blessed Coast Seeds Sour Samurai. Yeah. To get my hands on some of those, throw them in my own tent, man. Miss that sour. Oh, yeah. I want something sour, you know what I mean, make that mouth water. Cool, yes, man. Well, that about wraps it up. Any final words before we sign off for the audience here?
Nah, man. I'm just appreciative to be here and just, yeah, thanks for having me on, man.
Oh, thank you, man. We appreciate you coming on. This is an awesome first appearance. Listeners, drop us a line. Let us know how you like today's episode. I know you love this breeder feature. We're doing a whole month of them. And again, thank you, Blessed Coast. This was awesome, man. Appreciate you taking the time.
Stay blessed, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, everybody. You can find us at growcastpodcast.com/action to see everything we're doing. And we will see you next time on the next Growcast. Be safe out there, everybody, and grow smarter. Bye-bye. That's our show for today, everybody. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you to Blessed Coast. Before we wrap up today's episode, shout out to AC Infinity, everybody. The best grow gear in the game. Code GROWCAST15 saves you 15% at acinfinity.com. They've got the thick, sturdy tents with the thick canvas and the thick tent poles. The best tents in the game. They've got the fans that you need, the inline fans, the Cloud Ray oscillating fans now. Again, code GROWCAST15 for 15% off. The best quality grow gear you can find. They've also got lights and scissors and pots and hangers and so much more. But when it comes to the fans and the tents, there's no one else out there that does it better. The inline fans, the Cloud Line series, are fantastic. The S series is the simple series. Still comes with a 10-speed fan controller. And the T series comes with a controller that lets you automatically dial in your temperature and humidity. ACInfinity.com, code GROWCAST15 for 15% off. They even have grow kits that come with everything you need to expand. Get that second veg tent, get that second flower tent you've been thinking about. Save with the kit and use code GROWCAST15, which now works on those kits. Saving you extra money with the best gear in the game, acinfinity.com. They've been our partners for years. We brought these guys along a long time ago. They've really, really expanded and done a great job. acinfinity.com, code GROWCAST15. Okay, that's all for today, everyone. Thank you so, so much for tuning in. I appreciate each and every one of you. I hope you're doing amazing things in your garden. Come and see me. We're doing events, we're doing meetups, we're doing classes. You know where to find us. Get on the list at growcastpodcast.com/list. That's how to stay up to date. And we'll see you next time, everybody.
Bye-bye.